Owen Allen.
That's all that counts.
I'm just glad Michael's also there for the record. Right, this paper 9 deals with the comments we've received on the exposure draft removal of fixed dates for first-time adopters, as Michael mentioned, which was published this August, and the comment deadline ended on the 27th of October. To date, we've received 37 comment letters. The responses in 34 of these were incorporated into our agenda paper, and we received 3 of them after the paper was posted. However, these latter 3 letters all support the amendment and do not raise any additional comments. All the letters that we did receive supported the proposed amendment to IFRS 1, and we considered all ancillary comments that were received in those letters, and the paragraph 7 to 19 of the paper discusses the comments which we thought needed to be brought to the board's attention, and they fall into 3 main themes. Firstly, there was an issue of removal of other fixed dates in IFRS 1. I guess people thought once we were removing 2 of them, we may as well continue and remove the rest. These ones specifically named were paragraphs D2 and D3, noted in 2 of the letters. The staff are not aware that these dates are causing any difficulties, however, and the issue is also outside of the scope of this exposure draft. So we recommend no action to be taken here, but if you receive any comments on this in the future, we'll obviously take it on board. The second issue that was raised in the letter relates to the increased relevance of paragraph B3 of IFRS 1, and the issue is that currently paragraph B2 requires retrospective application of the derecognition principles because it has this fixed date of 1 January 2004 in it. But if paragraph B2 is amended, as the exposure draft suggests, then the only option for retrospective application, if an entity chooses to do so, would be in paragraph B3. And the respondent stated that the wording of this paragraph B3 was too restrictive, and that an entity may not have gathered the necessary information required at the time of the transaction. So they suggested wording around the theme of the information can be reliably determined. And now the staff looked into it and realized that the board's rationale behind the current wording of B3 was to avoid or minimize, where possible, the use of hindsight. So we think that the wording should remain this way. No action recommended here either then. Thirdly, the wording in paragraph B2, a respondent thinks that it's not clear what the phrase "in other words" means in that paragraph. And as we've noted in paragraph 18 of our paper, we think the wording is clear, insofar as it applies to both assets and financial assets and liabilities that are on the balance sheet to the date of transition, but would not have been under IFRS, or vice versa. Consequently, we recommend that no action is taken in respect of this comment either. So if we move on to question 1 then, we ask the board if it agrees that no action should be taken with respect to these comments.
Do you agree with the staff that we don't need to react?
Yeah. Okay. I do, David, but I have to say in the respondent's concern about, in other words, and replacing it with, for example, I just make the change. Someone out there thinks they're confusing, why not make it?
Where is this?
This is paragraph 17. It's not a big issue, but I think it's a litmus test. If someone finds the words confusing, and we can put another set of words in which doesn't change the meaning at all, just do it.
Instead of, in other words, for example?
Yeah, just put yes. For example.
Yes, for example, that's fine. David, I want to make a comment on something.
Oh, on this, the points they made?
No, the one that Lucy brought up, the first issue. Lucy, you brought up the issue about the IFRS 1, D2, and D3 regarding share-based compensation issues.
And the first
I'm particularly aware of a jurisdiction that is intending to move towards IFRS, and they feel, and I'm really surprised that they spoke to me, and I thought they would submit a comment letter to the IASB about the stock compensation. Is there any plan by the staff to discuss? I appreciate that right now it's out of the scope, But is there any plan in the future to bring, to take this issue or on the staff compensation and don't even touch on it? Because if I understand right, staff compensation is going back to 2004.
I'll just answer that. There are no plans to address that. We're not aware that there are particular problems in applying that. I mean, if you have information to the contrary, then obviously, you know, we will look at that. We can be happy to look at that. But the dates there relate to the dates of the publication of the exposure draft preceding IFRS 2, and were really just intended to obviously capture those share-based payments that had been granted prior to or after that date, but hadn't vested by the date of transition. So that, I think, you know, anything that has already vested prior to transition date is outside the scope of IFRS 1. So you are already exempted from that. So we're only talking about ones which
existing
are
unvested options.
Indeed.
Yep, I know
yes.
That.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Still didn't. So,
okay, well, we could certainly look into that, but it's not one that had been raised as a particular problem previously.
Yeah, they took care of it in a different way, that's the same thing.
PK, is it that they don't like the accounting answer and they want to get as much relief as possible by trying to, in a way, have a considering clause for some which were granted after 2004, but because now we are in 2010, they don't want to go back as much as far back as 2004, or what?
The most of these options, like Michael correctly said, is about the unvested options. If they are issued and vested subsequently, that's not an issue here. We're talking about unvested options. And not all unvested options, but some unvested options have a cliff vesting, and those cliff vesting means they vest all in one bullet. And those happen, they can have a period of 5 years. So anything after 2005 or 2006 can be in currency even to this date. And so there is an issue about that. And somebody has taken a view that anything before their adoption of IFRS they would not consider. So it's moving the deadline. Probably this is the only thing left in the 2004 era. This is the only D2 and D3 are the only ones left in that period. That's why I'm bringing
them. That would amount to a prospective application of IFRS, not a retrospective application in that case.
This, if I remember rightly, was put in as an anti-avoidance thing, that because Europe was still going in 2005 at this case, so it was put in to stop them just looking forward and banging everything into the period before adoption. So it's to catch those that were going to try and get away with the share option counting. But I think, PK, if they have an issue, they probably should come forward with their solution and we can write back. But I rather suspect we'd take a fairly hard line on it. Let's see what happens. They should write if they've got a problem.
One more to the list.
Okay, anyone else? Any comments on the first bit or otherwise agree? Okay, next question, Lucy.
On the issue of the effective date, before we get to that final question, one respondent requested that the effective date be a date in the past, namely the 1st of January 2010, to assist those entities in that jurisdiction that are currently in the process of transition to IFRS. The staff think, however, that the amendment should be effective for annual periods beginning on or after 1 July 2011, with early adoption permitted. We have then included the draft wording of the final amendment in Appendix B to the paper. So question two then asks whether the board approves the staff to proceed in order to finalise this amendment.
Okay, the staff reaction to the comment is on para 21 where jurisdictions can't do it on a going backwards, so that's why the staff recommend they go forward. Anyone with early adoption? Anyone disagree? Okay, Lucy, thank you. That's it. Unanimous.
Thank you very much.